Luca.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your kind introduction. Today I will discuss about an idea of using an optical wiggler, a laser pulse as an optical wiggler instead of a magnetic undulator in order to make a free electron laser. The idea actually is not a new one, and there are many authors or several authors in the literature who already discussed this idea. But I think that quite recently we performed fully consistent 3D simulations showing the possibilities under certain conditions that I will describe later on of electron beam brightness and laser pulse energy. Under which condition we can have production of coherent X-rays in a Thomson source. A typical backscattering Thomson source layout is depicted in this layout, typically a 1 nanocoulomb electron beam with an energy of around 10 to 100 MeV is colliding against a tightly focused laser pulse carrying a few joules of laser energy. The focal spot size is typically between 10 and 50 micron. And due to this interaction, some of the laser photons are backscattered and transform into X or gamma rays in the range of energies between kV or MeV. And for a typical incoherent backscattering Thomson source, we can produce a number of photons per pulse ranging from 10 to the 5 to 10 to the 8. So the idea is to use this layout and operate it as a free electron laser. The first thing that we have to keep in mind that there is a difference in the free electron laser resonance condition between the standard expression for a magnetostatic wiggler to the expression that we have to apply for an electromagnetic wiggler. Well, the difference is basically a factor 4 instead of 2 in the denominator due to the fact that this is a real photon beam compared to a virtual photon beam of a magnetostatic wiggler. The advantage is clearly that to radiate at a 1 angstrom, instead of using a centimeter scale undulator and a high energy electron beam, we might use a micron scale undulator with an electron beam whose energy is in the range of a few tens of MeV. The undulator parameter, or we might call it the equivalent undulator parameter, in this case is the laser parameter, which is defined as for the undulator parameter as the dimensionless vector potential amplitude associated to the laser field. And in practical units, this parameter is given by the square root of the power in the laser pulse in terawatt, and the ratio between the wavelength of the laser and the laser spot size in micron. It's easily seen from this relationship that we need really powerful laser carrying terawatt of laser power if we want to focus down to a few tens of micron in order to reach amplitudes for the laser parameters of the order of 1. So, as I was saying, recent 3D simulations show the existence of an FEL instability with exponential growth in a Thomson source under certain condition of electron and laser beams. And so in this talk, I will give you a set of simple formulas that are trying to explain what are these conditions in terms of the usual electron laser beam parameters like current, emittance, laser power, and so on and so forth. There was a recent paper showing the results of this 3D simulation and also a poster was presented on Monday by Vittorio Petrillo. Well, what we observe is that using a kiloamp electron beam with this kind of energy and normalized electrons emittance colliding with this kind of Tisefire laser pulse, we could see that the radiation intensity along the interaction grows exponentially and reaches saturation after a few picoseconds of interaction time between the electron beam and the laser pulse, as well for the bunching. This driving of the FEL exponential instability is clearly affected by the normalized emittance of the electron beam. And in this plot, we can see the normalized intensity at saturation. This is usually defined in unit of rho, the FEL parameter, times the power in the electron beam. And for a zero emittance beam, it's usually of the order of 1.2, 1.4. And we can see that under this condition, the exponential instability is present and it's driven only if the emittance is smaller than 1 millimeter millirad. Another important observation from the results of simulation was the fact that the intensity radiation pattern, which starts at the beginning of interaction between the electron beam and the laser beam from noise, this is a typical SASE FEL case, it then turns at the end of the interaction after 5 picoseconds into a quasi-single diffraction-limited mode, which, in our perspective, is another signature of the presence of the collective instability. And at the end, we could evaluate that 10 to the 10 photons per pulse at this energy were emitted in a coherent diffraction-limited radiation beam, which is much diffracts in a solid angle much smaller than the typical divergence angle, RMS divergence angle of the incoherent Thomson radiation, which follows the electron beam divergence angle. So we wanted to at least to try to understand how these Thomson source FEL could work. And the first thing we have to keep in mind is the following. The electron beam is propagating in free space. So it follows an envelope with the typical hourglass shape. And the single electron trajectories are straight line crossing in a stochastic fashion the focal area, as typical of an emittance-dominated beam, which is tightly focused and crosses a focal region.
5 minutes.
Uh-huh. So the incoming laser field producing a wiggling motion on the electron trajectory, but clearly the secular average trajectory is still a linear one, a rectilinear one. Because of this wiggling action, we produce radiation. And what we observe from simulation is that when the radiation field leaves the interaction region, it diffracts according to its in vacuum Rayleigh range diffraction condition, which is of the order of few microradian instead of milliradian of the electron. So in order to explain all of this, we sort of cast a system of condition in terms of the typical laser and beam parameter. So we basically specify the laser using the wavelength, power, spot size, energy, Rayleigh range, and laser pulse duration. We specify the electron beam using the typical condition. We use the resonance relation for the FEL and the standard definition for rho. And then we start to plug in the optimum conditions that the system has to satisfy. A laser length enough to reach saturation, geometrical overlap in the focal area, the fact that the laser can have ripples in the modulation and can have a bandwidth, and also we consider the FEL brand, bandwidth broadening due to beam emittance, deriving a what we might call the generalized Pellegrini criterion, which has this correction factor, which in our case it's a huge number. And let me skip the example and go directly to the end of the derivation. By solving these systems of eight conditions with 11 free parameters, we can basically express the relevant parameter like emittance, energy in the laser pulse, power, radiation wavelength, as a function of only three free parameters: the laser wavelength, the amplitude of the laser modulation ripple, and the beam current. Clearly, these are the threshold conditions that the system has to satisfy. Let me just give you a practical example in the case that the colliding laser is a Thai sapphire laser. We can see that the value specified for the emittance, the laser pulse energy, and the radiation wavelength are, when we plug in numbers for the current and the laser ripple amplitude, gives us a set of numbers which are very close to what have been found in the simulation. So in this case, we need a 22 MeV beam to radiate at 2 angstrom. The gain length is 160 micron. And we need 6 joule of laser energy. So
1 minute, please, Luca.
How much? 1 minute. Okay. Some latest results from simulation are the study of how these laser ripples can affect the exponential instability. And by using still the typical numbers as in the previous example, we notice that we can have still a saturation at the end of the interaction if the laser ripple amplitude is smaller than a few percent, 1 to 2%. And for more details on the 3D system of equations used for the simulation and the latest results, I address you to this to this paper, which was recently published on PRS Tab, and also to this poster that was presented by Vittorio Petrino. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have a question up at the back.
That's a great idea, Luca. I just have a question about how you're going to achieve the 1.5 kiloamps. Five picosecond, which give you about 75 nanocoulomb, if I calculate correctly, and 0.1 micron emittance.
Well, in this poster, we are showing a layout for a possible injector for this kind of beam, which is 1 nanocoulomb, 1.5 kiloamp, 15 MeV, focused down to 10 micron. You have to keep in mind the following. These beam parameters have to be maintained over a length of a few millimeters. Clearly, if you look at the plasma wavelength in the transverse and in the longitudinal plane of this beam, these are order of centimeter. So that means that the space charge fields of the beam would prevent to transport this beam maintaining these characteristics over more than a few centimeters. But the crucial point here is that you have to produce these beam parameters and maintain that over the interaction length, which is a few picoseconds.
Thank you. Any other questions? Kwanjie?
This is very nice result, but it's extremely surprising because you are violating emittance condition by a factor of 1,000.
300, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. yes, one reason is, let me get back to the generalization of the Kim-Pellegrini criterion. Okay, it's this one. Our interpretation so far is that because of the absence of betatron motion, the inhomogeneous broadening of the emission is different. So if you take into account this correction factor, this is typically one for a magnetic undulator-based SASE-FEL. If you take LCLS number, this is the radiation, the Rayleigh range of the emitted radiation, and this is the gain length. For the LCLS, these two numbers are almost equal, a few meters, 10 meters. In our case, assuming that we are emitting a single mode diffraction limited radiation beam, the gain length is of the order of 100 micron, but the Rayleigh range is still of the order of a few meters. So this gives you a correction factor which is of the order of 100. That is the reason why the, let's say, Kim-Pellegrini criterion threshold for LCLS is of the order, as we know, of a fraction of a millimeter milliradian, and in our case is 0.15, taking into account this correction factor. Clearly, without this correction factor, it would be half a nanometer, which would be an inconceivable number.
Okay, thank you. Another question there from Bill Foley, please.
I guess, like Quan Jay, I find this a very surprising result. And I just wonder, in terms, if you transform to the rest frame of the electron beam, what is it that's so different about an electromagnetic undulator compared to a normal magnetic undulator that allows you to violate the normal criterion by a factor of 300? I mean, admittedly, there's factor of two that appears, but other than that, essentially you're saying the properties of the emitted mode change such that the gain length drops to, microns in this case, whereas I presume for a magnetic undulator with the same resonance condition that would be in the X-ray, you wouldn't find this result. Is that correct?
We ran our 3D simulation code for a magnetic undulator, and the exponential instability didn't grow. Our initial interpretation is that the wavefront of an optical wiggler is curved, while the wavefront of a magnetic undulator is flat. And this matches better the, the electron beam diffraction in the focus. Or, if you want to put it in terms of transverse phase spaces, the transverse phase space of the electron beam in the focal area is a tilted ellipse, with a strong correlation if you are out of the focal plane for this kind of tightly focused beam. The same is for the laser beam transverse phase space, which has curved wavefronts. And this is a difference with respect to the magnetic undulator. And for the moment, we didn't have a quantitative explanation yet. but it's our answers to explain the difference.
I think this is ripe for offline discussion.
Yeah.
Very good, I agree.
Of course, we would welcome any kind of suggestion and help in interpreting this.
It's an interesting topic. Time for just one more brief question there. If you can keep it brief, please. Thank you.
Just wondering what kind of levels you were thinking of for the energy spread in the beam and how
10 to minus
an
4.
Issue that is?
In the simulation, we use 10 to minus 4.
Yeah, that was suitably brief. Can Just before you go, we can first of all thank our speaker, and then I'd like to make an announcement.
Thank you.